Last week, as we started our series thinking about this idea of journeying together, we thought particularly about the importance of caring and talked about trying to encourage each of us to develop this as a core value in our lives, something that becomes a characteristic of who we are and what we do. And this is vitally important for each of us as we seek to live as a family of God's people, that we are each individually known and recognized as people who care. This morning, though, we're not just thinking about how this can only become a core value for each of us individually, but how it can become a core culture in our church. How can we more fully embed this idea of caring and loving for each other into who we are and what we do? And when we were looking at those verses from John earlier, we thought about the importance of loving each other as Jesus has loved us. And this passage from Hebrews that Ron's just read gives us an opportunity to explore some of the practical outworkings of that. In our reading, we were reminded of the wonderful privilege we have of coming into God's presence, which is an amazing privilege that we can come and meet with God. Here, it's referred to as the most holy place. At the time of Jesus, when he was walking around in Palestine, worship of God was centered around a magnificent temple in Jerusalem. Different people were allowed access to different courtyards. They were arranged sort of in concentric squares, if you can have concentric squares. You know what I mean? Each one allowing closer access to God. Right at the outside was for Gentiles, people who weren't part of the Jewish nation, but they wanted to come and worship the Jewish God. And they were allowed to come, but only part way. The next was for Jewish women who wanted to come and worship their God. It was a very hierarchical, patriarchal society. And women could go a bit further than the Gentiles, but not all that far in. The next was for Jewish men as they came to worship and to sacrifice. And then priests from a particular tribe could go even further in. And then you came to the actual temple area, the sanctuary, the place where there was a real sense of God's presence, right in the middle, where priests made offerings, they kept candles burning, and so on. And then at the back of that was this place that was referred to as the most holy place. A place that only the high priest, the most senior priest, could enter into. He could only do that once a year as he came and offered particular sacrifices for the people and for the temple. The ordinary people, as they spent time in the court of the Gentiles or the women's court or the men's court, they could only wonder at what went on in there. They knew they would never get in. They knew they'd never get close to what was happening there. I don't know if any of you have visited Carisbrook Castle on the Isle of Wight. It's a place that I've been to, and I was down on the Isle of Wight on holiday with my parents 30 years-ish ago. And we decided to go for a day and have a look around Carisbrook Castle. So we were queuing up to get in and buy tickets and so on and get the guided tour. And suddenly, I realised that a friend of mine was on the staff. And she was, you know, welcoming people in and taking tickets and so on and so forth. And there was that sort of look across the room, and we realised that we knew each other. And she said, "Come in and see the good bits." And we were given a special tour. We were allowed to go to places that the common people don't go to. You know what I mean? And, you know, we got closer to the action. But I'm sure there were places that even then we weren't allowed to get to because that was where the family were and so on and so forth. And there was that sense of separation from the centre of what was going on. And that's what it was like as they came to worship God. But our passage this morning tells us that that is no longer the case, that we are no longer excluded from that holy place of meeting with God. Every single one of us can enter into it confidently because we trust in Jesus, the Jesus who died for us, the Jesus who died to make us clean, the Jesus who died to make us fit for God's presence. And we can and we should take advantage of this each day as we come and spend time with God in prayer and reflect and read the Bible and offer our worship to God and listen to what he has to say to us. But times like these, this morning, are also vitally important as we come together to meet with God and to worship him as a community of his people. And this passage goes on to remind us of this, as it warns us against what some people were doing. They were not meeting together. They'd given up and said, I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm going to carry on to worship God on my own, but I'm not going to meet as a community of God's people. And it encourages us to do that. It says it's important, it's vital that we spend time together, that we worship together, we listen to what God has to say together, we prepare ourselves together for the things he wants us to do. And this passage has something important to say about this topic of journeying together, of being there for each other. It speaks about encouraging one another. This is one of our paraclesis words, this idea of encouragement, which reminds us that one of the opportunities we have as we meet together, particularly maybe as we spend time before and after services, is to speak words of encouragement and comfort and hope into people's lives. And this requires knowing something about what's going on in their lives, being prepared to really listen to find out what's going on, and then being there with an encouraging word or action. But it also speaks about it being intentional. Verse 24, let us consider how we may spur one another on. This is not just something that happens by accident. This is something that we are encouraged to plan for, something we think about, something we prepare for. Before we set out to come here this morning, did we spend time thinking about, praying about the people we are going to meet and ask God to show us who he wants us to come alongside and encourage? If not, what about doing that next week? To actually take time with God and to say, is there somebody that you want me to come alongside and to encourage and to speak to and to bless? Are we prepared to deliberately choose to sit somewhere else than where we normally do, so we get to sit with somebody that we don't normally do and we get to know them a bit better? Mind you, if you all do that next week, you might end up sitting next to each other again. So we'll see how it works out. But there's a deliberate action to try and get to know people better. Are we looking for encouragement, opportunities to encourage others to love more deeply and to do good things? The times we have together are precious times. Times when we can leave behind the problems and the challenges of everyday life and come to focus on God. But the problems and challenges are still there, and we still carry them. The question for us is, are we prepared to come alongside others as they carry those burdens and be there for them, to encourage them? Are we each prepared to do the work for this loving care to become a deeply ingrained part of the culture of our church? We'll explore these ideas a bit more in a moment, but for now, let's take an opportunity to see whether there's anybody who wants to share anything of what this week's reflections, activities, ideas has raised in their minds. Anybody want to share anything about this journey that we've been on so far? Just before that story, the followers of Jesus himself, had been very busy. They'd been engaged in a big mission, and they were coming back and talking about all the things that had happened. And they needed a bit of a break. And Jesus recognized that, and so he encourages them to come away, to find somewhere quiet, to rest. But when they arrived, they found that there was a, large crowd of people waiting. People who had been with Jesus and experienced the blessings of his ministry, and they wanted to continue spending time with him. So they saw Jesus leaving, and they ran to be at the place where he was going to. And that's what Jesus was greeted with, and his followers were greeted with as they got off the boat. They saw this great crowd of people. Think about times when you have desperately needed a holiday. And you go off somewhere. Maybe you fly off to some exotic destination. Maybe you go to a cottage in Scotland or whatever it is. And you get away and you think, I'm going to be able to have a break for a week or 2 weeks or whatever. And you get there and you find your work colleagues, your neighbours, your friends are all there waiting to greet you. Now, you love spending time with them, but you wanted a break. People recognize what I'm saying. But Jesus doesn't react that way at all. He sees this crowd of people and he recognizes that they are sheep without a shepherd. And that carries the idea of that there was no one to lead them, no one to guide them, no one to show them how to behave and what to do. Imagine that you're a skilled hill walker, an expert map reader, sort of a Mark Vernon, a Dave Tickle, those sorts of people. And you're off walking in the hills, and you're having a great time, and you come across this group of people, and they're lost. And they haven't got a clue where to go. And you've got an option. You can laugh at them, walk by, confident in your superiority. Or you can come alongside them and say, look, I can help. I can lead you. I can guide you. I can show you where you want to go. And you can lead them to safety. And you have that choice. Jesus saw the crowds. They didn't have anyone to lead them. He has compassion on them. And that wasn't just a feeling. It resulted in action as he taught them many things. And then it gets late, people will be getting hungry, the disciples are probably getting tired, and so they come to Jesus and say, we've got a problem, but we've also got a solution. It's okay, we've got it sorted out. It's a long way from anywhere, it's late, send them away. We don't want anything to do with them anymore. They'd run out of compassion. You know, sometimes there's when you see all these appeals to help famine victims or refugees and so on, some people say, well, we just can't do any more. That's sort of how the disciples were. There was nothing they thought they could do. They just wanted to get rid of the problem and have a rest. But Jesus does not view the people as a problem. He sees them as people with a need, and he chooses to do something about it. And this characterizes his attitude throughout the entire story. When the crowd arrived, he didn't send them away because he was tired and needed a rest. He accepted them as they were and engaged with them. And acceptance is an important part of a caring culture. Saying to everyone that they are welcome, that they are safe here, whatever their needs or situation. When they had a particular need, in this case being hungry, he didn't send them away, but he worked to satisfy that need. His action showed and demonstrated that he cared for them, that he thought they were worth spending time and energy on, that they were valued. The way the disciples responded to this needy crowd, and the way that Jesus responded to this needy crowd, would have told different stories. What stories are we telling by how we engage with others? But one of the great things about this story is that Jesus doesn't satisfy the needs of the crowd on his own. He encourages his followers to get involved. These ones who just wanted to get rid of the problem, Jesus says, actually, you're going to be part of the solution. No longer being focused on getting rid of the crowd, but being part of blessing them. And Jesus graciously draws his followers into what he is going to do. Sometimes, when I was working in the IT industry, and we were doing a big project or whatever it was, somebody on the team would come to me and say, look, I haven't got a clue what to do about this. What should we do? And often, the easiest thing for me would have been to take that problem away from them, to sort it out, and to move on and do something else. It would have been the quickest thing to do. It would have been the easiest thing to do. But it wouldn't have helped that person. It wouldn't have helped them grow and develop and learn and know how to cope with that sort of thing in the future. It was important to involve them in the solution. And this is what Jesus is doing with his followers. And they learn some important lessons about what it means to engage with people who are in need. The first thing they find is it involves accepting responsibility for others. Even if you don't know what you can do for them. It doesn't mean that we take on all the responsibility, but we do associate ourselves with it. We are saying that this was a burden you were carrying on your own. Now I'm willing to help carry it with you. You were hungry in this case. You are still hungry. I recognise that, and I'm going to do something to help. It means being prepared to find out the scope of the need. Jesus told his followers to go into the crowd and find out what resources, how much food was available. They had to go into the crowd, they had to talk with them, they had to find out what was really going on. What was the size of what they were taking on? It involves thinking, it involves planning, it involves being aware. It means not being satisfied with just coming up with excuses, reasons why we can't do something. Not having enough food, not having enough money to buy food, wasn't a good enough reason not to feed the hungry. How often do we make excuses? How often do we come up with reasons to not help, to not come alongside, when Jesus calls us to come alongside those who are in need and to bless them? There were lots of reasons why we, as churches across Tamworth, could have said that running a winter night shelter during February was too hard. We didn't know what it would involve. We didn't know where we'd get the things we needed. We didn't know if we'd be able to cope with the people who turned up. But instead, we had the opportunity. We had the privilege of being a real blessing to people in real need. We didn't come up with reasons to say why we couldn't do it. We said, let's do this and see where it takes us. It involves taking what we have, however inadequate that might seem, and placing it in the hands of Jesus for him to bless. His disciples collected together everything that was available, which wasn't much. 5 loaves, 2 fish. And they brought it and gave it to Jesus. It was then his responsibility to make that enough for everyone. And he was perfectly capable of living up to that responsibility. Sometimes we may feel we may not have anywhere near enough to do what needs to be done, to come alongside somebody, to encourage them, to support them. We have no idea how we can help in that particular situation. But Jesus may be saying, bring whatever you have, offer it to me, and I will make it enough. Another thing they learned is actually, for this to work, we need to rely on the amazing power of Jesus. The disciples bring the food to Jesus. Jesus blesses it. Jesus gives it back to them so they can then give it to the people. They are not cut out of the loop, but become an integral part of bringing blessing to the people, with Jesus at the centre. Another thing they find is actually helping people in need results in people being satisfied. What a sense of achievement those disciples must have felt as they recognised that those people who had been hungry, each of them had been able to eat, each of them had been satisfied. And they knew that because there was even some left over. One of the privileges of coming alongside people who are struggling and to whom we can offer care and love is that we have the privilege of journeying with people as they find their needs being met and coming in to a better place. Another thing they find is that it demonstrates love coming alongside others. The disciples were sent out into the multitude to take the love of Jesus to them. It wasn't that Jesus set up a fish and bread bar and everybody was encouraged to come and the disciples were looking on and saying, "Isn't this great what Jesus is doing?" Actually, Jesus said, "Here you are, guys. Go and take this and bless everybody." And they were no longer seeing this as a problem, but they were able to demonstrate love to those who were in need. The disciples had seen a need, were overwhelmed by it, and wanted to get rid of the problem. But instead, as they listened to, as they were obedient to Jesus, they were able to be part of a wonderful act of blessing to thousands of people. Mark read at the end, the number of the men who had eaten was 5,000. We assume the families were there, the wives were there, the children were there. So how many people are we talking about? 5, 10, 15,000 people? We don't know. A huge number of people they were able to bless because they listened to Jesus. They brought what they had to Jesus and they acted in the power and under the guidance of Jesus. Are we prepared to be people who bring what we have, however small and insignificant it might be, to bring it to Jesus, to offer it to him in his power and motivated by his love, so that we can seek to be an encouragement to each other? We might not think we're very good at listening, but let's offer our listening to God and ask him to show us who he wants to come alongside and spend time with. Are we prepared for this to be a key component of who we are as church together? That even more than is the case today, when people see what's going on here, they will say, "This is a church where people deeply and meaningfully love each other." Are we prepared to love and to come alongside others and be a blessing to them? Who are you going to lovingly encourage others?